listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Today, we continue our Set Apart to Serve conversation with theology professors from Concordia Seminary St. Louis as we learn about pastoral formation and diaconal formation at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University Irvine. You can learn more about Concordia University Irvine at cui.edu. Joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Jason Lane, Associate Professor of Historical Theology at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Dr. Lane, welcome back to The Coffee Hour.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
Also joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Peter Nafsker, Associate Professor of Practical Theology at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Dr. Nafsker, welcome back to The Coffee Hour.
Thanks a lot.
I think it's been a while since we've talked with each of you on various topics, always theological. Nice to have some time today to talk with you about your life at seminary and what life is like for students who are there at Concordia Seminary for formation. Let's talk about your role at seminary, at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Dr. Lane, what do you love about what you get to do every day at Concordia Seminary?
Yeah, part of it is the joy of being with people who are preparing to serve people with the gospel and a community that's gathered around the Word of God, discussing theology, trying to figure out what the needs are of the church, sometimes doing that initially with some ignorance and then watching them grow. And so I've only been here, this is now my second year, and probably Dr. Nafsker could speak a lot more to this, but you just see their formation from the day one that they come in to watching them progress. That's a total joy to be part of that.
Dr. Nafsker, what about you? What do you love about what you get to do at the seminary?
Yeah, since Jason brought it up, it is what's really fun is to see guys come in their first year and they're kind of awestruck and intimidated and not sure what to expect. And they love Jesus and they love people and they love theology, but they're also new to everything. And then you see them after a couple of years of life on campus, a year of vicarage where they're out in the church, really getting a lesson in what it's like to do real ministry. And then they come back their fourth year and the level of maturity. And what's interesting, the relationships that were built the first couple of years then almost seem to have deepened while they're gone because they come back ready to engage even more. And so the whole four-year process is really a neat experience to walk people through.
You both are professors in different areas of theology at the seminary. Let's talk about why that area of theology is what you love to learn and teach about. Dr. Nafsker, we'll start with you.
Well, I teach in the practical department, but I'd just as happily call it the practice of good theology department. Because if you don't have good theology, I don't know what you're practicing. And if you're not planning to practice it, I don't know why you're studying it. And so, you know, of the courses I teach, just later on today, I'm going to teach a homiletics course, and we're going to be walking through the Lutheran confessions, kind of scanning the confessions for what they say about preaching, about proclamation of the word. And so there's, you know, they're so intertwined, the departments, at least I'm sure the way Jason and I both teach is there's history involved in what all I'm doing. And there's, I know Jason's always teaching history toward the view of we're doing ministry today. How does the history of the church help us? So when I came back from the parish, I was in the parish for 9 years. It was really just kind of a different kind of practice of theology. Now you're doing it with people who are preparing for the front lines instead of being on the front lines.
Dr. Lane, what do you love about the area of theology that you get to practice in?
Yeah, so teaching in historical theology, as Peter mentioned, it's never just learning a bunch of information and facts or something like that. Is I think we've all been in history courses where that is sometimes the case, and you pass your test and you hand it in, and then you forget, you know, when everything happened or the major figures. But what we try to do is slow students down so that they start reading primary sources through history, and that just allows them to hear it from the horse's mouth. It's one thing to say, I know what Thomas Aquinas thinks by having read someone that wrote about Thomas Aquinas. It's a very different thing to read Thomas Aquinas. And so we're just trying to help them do that. And what it does is it makes them more sensitive, I think, to their own, what will be their own pastoral context. Because you start seeing all of the issues that lead to what the church historians are what theologians in the church were struggling with to try to articulate Christ in their age. And it's so nice to see them realize it's not just like these things happen in a vacuum. There's context in which people confess Christ in various ages, and they're going to be doing that same sort of thing. So as Peter was mentioning, I try to figure out, especially when we're studying Luther, who's very much a pastoral theologian, when you study Luther, in the Reformation class that I teach, you start realizing how much this has impact for the pastors who are going to be giving spiritual counsel and trying to lead people faithfully to repentance and faith through the scriptures, that Luther's been there, done that, and you have a faithful friend and witness to help you.
Dr. Lane, do you have a favorite topic in the area of historical theology?
You know, I mean, I did my doctoral studies on actually preaching in the church, so that's kind of where it always, all of these 16th, 17th century preaching on the book of James, but I think you'll find at the seminary that all sorts of disciplines collide with one another because it actually is about speaking Christ to the world, and we want to equip folks to do that. But I love that part of the Reformation studies. So I'm at home in the Reformation and did some study into 17th century Lutheranism, but I love seeing that the study of theology in the 16th and 17th century was actually geared toward pastoral care. And so I you know, the hymnody of the church or the poetry and the devotionals or the preaching, all of those things impacted the daily life of people in the 16th and 17th century. And I think it ought to be the same for us today. So I try to draw out some of those. That's my joy.
They didn't have podcasts in the 16th and 17th century. So how do you evaluate a sermon from then and the delivery of that sermon?
That's a Dr. Nafsker question.
Okay. All right. So favorite area of practical theology, Dr. Nafsker, that you really are a favorite topic in practical theology?
So my focus in our department is on homiletics, preaching. And so I teach first-year preachers, second-year preachers, fourth-year preachers, theology of preaching, trends in homiletics through our DMN program. So I teach a lot of homiletics preaching courses. And actually, it's kind of interesting. We're just starting a new course this spring. It's actually on location in Germany, where we're going to be studying Luther's preaching for 2.5 weeks as we visit Luther sites. Another history professor, Jerry Bode, and I will be doing that together, where we're going to be immersing ourselves in Luther's preaching with an eye toward not only helping it help us understand the Reformation and the truths of the gospel, but also help equip us as preachers today. What can we learn from Luther's engagement of his context about engaging our own context? And so for me, the preaching classes are really a lot of fun, partially because students are, frankly, terrified to preach. You know, the public speaking is, of course, one of the biggest fears that everybody has. And so they're very receptive. All the guys want to be good preachers. And they want to be faithful to our tradition. They want to be faithful to the scriptures. They want to be engaging for our hearers. And so that makes for very receptive and eager students. And so anytime I'm teaching a homiletics class, that ends up being kind of where a lot of things come together, the history, the theology, the exegesis of the scriptures for the sake of God's people. And that makes it a lot of fun.
You've touched on this now that there are four areas, I suppose, of theology at the seminary for the sake of good order. But talk a little bit more about how they interact, how the students learn in these different areas, but then how all of that comes together for that formation of the student, Dr. Nafsker.
Yeah, so the four departments are, you know, historical theology and systematic theology and exegetical theology and practical theology. And you might look at it like this. Our life and our faith and our practice is always normed and guided by the scriptures. And so we have to understand what the prophets and apostles sent by Jesus himself say to us about what we believe and how we live. So the study of the scriptures is very important and foundational. The study of the history is basically how has the church in the past engaged the scriptures? In what ways have they engaged the scriptures well and faithfully? In what ways maybe have they been a little bit off track? But how do we, you know, we don't start in the 21st century right after Jesus ascended. We come in this long train. We're shaped by those who have gone before us. The systematic theology task, which is what I did my doctoral work on, is taking kind of the history in the Bible and saying, what's the best way to formulate our thinking for today? What concepts, what frameworks will help us remain faithful? And then it's all for the sake of practicing it and teaching, worship, preaching, evangelism. And so it really is, it's kind of fun on the faculty because all of us have our specific areas of deep study and expertise, But all of us are historians. All of us are practicing theologians. All of us are exegetes. All of us are systematicians. And we do that together. We depend on each other.
Blaine, from your perspective, do you have anything to add?
No, that was nicely said.
We will learn more about formation at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis with Dr. Lane and Dr. Nafsker in just a moment. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
At Concordia University Irvine, you have the freedom to explore your future and your faith. Across over 60 on-campus and online programs, you'll experience Christian education that's uniquely designed to develop the whole person, to prepare you not just for your career, but for all of your callings in life. Here you'll explore life's toughest questions, gain lifelong skills, and make relationships that last a lifetime. Concordia University Irvine. Learn more at cui.edu.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are in our Set Apart to Serve conversation today, talking with professors of theology at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, learning about what they love about teaching theology and what they love about working with students at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Dr. Lane, what would you say is students can expect from their experience, in their experience at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis? Tell us a little bit about, from your perspective, and I know you're fairly new to Concordia Seminary in St. Louis as a professor.
Yeah, one, you get students of all kinds. Sometimes you have them, they come right out of college, and they've been kind of prepared through pre-seminary programs at our Concordias, so they're well-versed in the languages. For instance, they have the tools of the languages and very little experience in the world. So they come in bright-eyed and ready to go. And we love having those guys in the classroom. Then there's others who come somewhat second career or out of, maybe they weren't prepared. They're coming out of a different college setting, university setting. So they each bring very different perspectives to the classroom. And some of them know a whole lot. Some of them don't know that much. And so there's a wide variety, especially in their initial year in the classroom, of what people can handle and what they can't. And I think as a professor who teaches in these first year classes, it's a challenge for me to try to find that sweet spot for the students where they can track. So what allows them all to be on the same page. But the major thing that is required, I think, is proper humility of they're actually being formed. And I think that this is ought to be comforting to anyone who comes to the seminary, is that you're not expected to have the answers when you get here. You're expected to be formed by the Word of God and by the study of Holy Scripture and by the formation and the life of worship and things like that here at the seminary, and to learn from others who have gone before us. And I, as a young person, I came out of a state school to the seminary in Fort Wayne, and I was from a faithful congregation and well taught, catechized, I suppose. But I went to the seminary and just could not believe the wealth, the riches of our theology. And so you just learn to keep your mouth shut a little bit and receive. And it's actually the posture, I think, of every good pastor and deaconess that's out there, is one who's always ready to receive from the Lord. And so I think we're trying to do that and form the guys and gals to be receptive to what the Lord is doing through His Word on them.
Or what would you say about the student experience at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, especially how students are fed spiritually, academically, socially?
Yeah, maybe I'll pick up a little bit on what Jason just mentioned, the humility that is kind of a prerequisite and a foundation for all of us, really. I mean, those of us who teach and work here we're still learning quite a bit too. We're a little bit further down the path in terms of what we've accumulated and what we've experienced, and we try to share that. But we do really look at it. I think I can speak for the faculty on this. We're well aware of the fact that some of these guys will be our pastor next year or my mom's pastor. And so there's a spirit of collaboration and a spirit of, I think, mutual respect that is not always the case in academia. And so you ask about students being spiritually fed. I mean, you've got all sorts of areas and ways in which students grow in their knowledge and their understanding and their own faith. Of course, some of that happens in chapel and through the preaching of the word and through the celebration of the sacraments. There's also a lot of mutual conversation and consolation that takes place on the intramural field, down in the field house, outside of class, where students, it's always kind of remarkable to me how open and eager students are, not just to learn the information, but to kind of get the inside scoop and to share some of their concerns and some of their fears and doubts. And we do really look at it like we're in this together, and we've all got our vocational responsibilities and certain things that we're called to do and be, but we're doing it together. And so it's a very much a collaborative endeavor.
Let's talk a little bit about the deaconess students on campus too. What is that experience like for the women who are studying to be deaconesses or even master's in theology students? What does that experience look like for them? How is it maybe different from the pastoral students? Pastor Nasker.
Yeah, I mean, there aren't deaconess students in my preaching classes. And so they're not preparing for the same kind of ministry. But it is always interesting when I teach systematic theology, there's usually some deaconess students in there. And I'm always very, frankly, impressed and encouraged by their ability, their interest, their work ethic. They add a nice female perspective to conversations too. They don't always, of course, think just like the MDiv pastoral students. And so bringing that perspective is really helpful. There's still a lot fewer of them, but they find a lot of unity together, especially because they kind of track along the same patterns. But it does add to, it makes all the students a little bit sharper, and it kind of reminds us that we're kind of all in this together. As professional church workers, even, we have different vocations, different roles.
Dr. Lane, what have you seen from your perspective too, deaconess students in your classes?
Yeah, so in my introductory to history class, I think all of them. So we have quite a mix of students in that class, and going back to the humility, I think for these ladies, it is one of the greatest acts of humility to come into the context of the seminary and be studying, because there is something, and I think this is pretty clear and known to everyone who comes in, we have a clear word from the Holy Scriptures about the pastoral office. We do not have the institution of the diaconal office by itself. It's actually tied very closely together with the particular needs of our church today, and also like really serious Christians who see the need for mercy in the church to extend the labor and the work of the pastoral office. And so they're going to be in partnership and working with a pastor. It's really great that they get to learn how to do that in humility here. And it also, as Peter mentions, it requires of our MDiv guys to be very sensitive to various perspectives, which they're going to need while they serve God's people in the parish. So I just see it as a remarkable work that they're doing, studying together with the seminary students, but it's forming relationships and the basis for what they're going to be doing very often, especially those guys that are going to serve in larger congregations that can have the great privilege of having a deaconess serving alongside them. So I think it's just a wonderful place for them to learn this very early on. And because the church doesn't know necessarily much about deaconesses on the ground, so we are instructing that here in this place, as well as Fort Wayne.
For the student enrolling at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, becoming a seminarian or a deaconess student, that's a big step. That's a huge investment. That's in terms of time and resources. That's a pretty big step, and maybe a little scary. But what would you say to the family of new students who are coming to seminary for the first time? Maybe a young person right out of college, or maybe spouse or family that might be concerned, have concerns about this. This is another big step in life. Dr. Nafsker, what would you say? What do you want families of seminary students to know?
One of the things that the seminary has put a lot of effort into over the last decade or two have been attention to families of seminarians, spouses, children. The transition is not easy, especially if you're not going straight from one school setting to another. And it's often challenging for spouses and for kids, but we've got a lot of attention and a lot of support for that. We have a person on staff. She does a wonderful job engaging, providing programming for wives. We have a seminary youth group. Both Jason and I have kids who show up to the seminary youth group and hang out with kids who've been displaced because they're in middle school or high school and they had to leave their schools. And we have seminarians who love to work with youth, who are the youth leaders of that weekly youth group. There's, intramurals. There's always sim wives who are playing intramurals and sim kids, as long as they're old enough to handle an ultimate frisbee or flag football situation. And so there's a lot of community on campus, and we've really made that an important piece of the residential experience, is that we're going to help you with community. You're going to find out you're not alone. There's a lot of similar experiences, and we don't just leave you to figure it out on your own.
Dr. Lane, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I guess it came up in the wives get together and they'll have a class. So they ask seminary professors to come and talk to the seminary wives. And it's just a great experience to get to know them and what they're dealing with on campus. And one of the questions came up, how am I supposed to do this where my husband is my pastor? And that's actually a very interesting and common refrain that appears. But I guess the encouragement is, one, that this person is being trained for it. And also, what we start learning about ourselves is that you're just around some really serious, wonderful Christians who love Christ, love the gospel. And so for the sake of that, knowing that that word needs to be preached and that the ministry of Christ needs to be sent off into all the world, you look past a whole lot of stuff that you might be critical of otherwise, or you just realize this is Christians making pretty significant sacrifices, but doing it because the cause is wonderful. And I see that in them, starting to work through, like, wait a sec, he actually is going to be my pastor. And my question was, do you not trust him as your pastor? And they're like, no, of course I do. He's going to be wonderful. And it's just, they have this moment of really being reassured that this is, in fact, totally pleasing to God, that they would be prepared for this work. And it does, again, just bring the community together. We're all in it together. We're trying to figure out how to prepare ourselves for this wonderful work that the Lord has in store for us.
And part of that too, I'll just jump in, is we take seriously that the wives are still the helpers to their husbands, even as they're pastors. And so wives have a sensitivity often, and a perspective that pastors can really benefit from. And so we try to help the guys learn to listen well to their spouses and to be caring, both as their pastor and one who is a husband that gets important help from his helpmate.
Dr. Lane, what encouragement do you have for congregations who are looking to raise up the next generation of church workers and the families in those congregations to encourage young people or second career people to go into second career church work?
One is, I don't think that we need to romanticize the seminary or preparing to be a church worker. As Christians, we know that there's work to be done. And someone has to do it. It's a little bit matter of fact. I mean, I know that this is a terrible analogy, so forgive it, but plumbing needs to get done. And so it's kind of nice to have someone in the family who knows how to do plumbing. It is also the case that the most essential thing for our life as Christians is that we hear Christ and are enriched by his word. Why not have someone in the family, someone in the congregation, say, that's a good thing, and we want to support you to make sure you do that for others. So I think there is something of the matter of factness that the gospel needs to be preached. Therefore, someone has to do it. And it's something like that where, of course, if you can't speak at all, if you can't read, if there's other reasons why you can't do it, fine. But for the most part, there's a lot of people who can be well-trained in order to serve in this capacity in the church. And to just know that as a Christian who loves Christ and wants others to know him, it's a real wonderful thing to be able to support and send off young folks for it.
Dr. Nefsker?
Yeah, I'd agree with what Jason said, and just encourage congregations that when you send someone to the seminary, you're participating in the work of the church collectively. And there's sometimes seminarians might feel, or even congregations might feel like, we're sending him off and now he's off on his own. Or a seminarian might feel like, I'm pursuing this on my own. No, we're always doing this kind of with support and accountability to one another. And so when we send someone to the seminary, We're saying we're sending you with our prayers, with our tangible financial support, with our eagerness to see the church, not just here, not just our congregation, but the church, frankly, around the world, fulfill its duty and proclaim the goodness of Christ in all places. And so it's really a great example of the church being the church, I think.
Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, csl.edu is where you can find more information. Our guest today, the Reverend Dr. Jason Lane, Associate Professor of Historical Theology at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Dr. Lane, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And the Reverend Dr. Peter Nafsker, Associate Professor of Practical Theology at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Dr. Nafsker, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks a lot.
Again, you can find more at csl.edu. You can learn more about Set Apart to Serve by visiting lcms.org/s. You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.